What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably have some sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you.
Shout out to our friends over at Captain Beard Co. Guys, if you are looking for beard care products, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, give Captain Beard Co. a try. They have this unbelievable beard butter, balm, oils, and then it smells amazing. Ladies, if you're looking for something for your men as a gift to help with their grooming, check them out. Also, if you guys are looking to just set the mood one night, candles, unbelievably smelling candles made with all natural ingredients here locally to St. Louis. Give them a shot. Also, while you're there, use the promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchase.
Hey there, guys. Really appreciate you checking out the Zach and Pat Show. If you can obviously tell, we are a newer podcast, but one way we're really trying to grow the show is trying to get up the amount of subscribers we have. So, you know, if you're watching the show and you're getting something out of it, we'd really appreciate it if you could click that subscribe button. That would help us out a ton. Please click that button. And now back to the show. We have a very special guest in studio today. Very excited to introduce him. He is a wealth consultant, a trainer, Nantan, the great and powerful Drew Ishmael. Welcome to the show.
Thank you much. Thank you, guys. This is really exciting. So as you can tell, I'm a little bit older than you guys. And so I was really excited to see that you were doing a podcast about manhood, fatherhood, leadership.
Yeah.
All the things I love. And as a little bit older, things I failed at. So, you know, you learn from your failures. So anything I can do to help.
Yeah. Oh. I appreciate that. I'm glad to have you on. Nantan.
Yeah, what's that mean?
So tell us about that.
So the Nantan is, it's an Apache word meaning spiritual and cultural leader. So it's a leadership position I have through that group F3 that I talked about. And in that, you're chosen for it by your predecessor. So the whole point of it is the reason we weren't able to conquer the Apaches very quickly and very easily is because once you killed an Antan, the new one would just step right up. Like he wasn't even missed. So it's all the responsibility and none of the power of leading a region or a group. And, so you lead through persuasion and, rather than through power, cause there is none. That position, but it's all volunteer organization F3. It's a leadership group wrapped in a workout, so it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, excited to jump into that.
Yeah, so what's F3 all about?
So F3 is a movement worldwide now, but it started in 2011, January 1 in Charlotte, North Carolina, by two guys, really good friends. That was a break off from another workout group, but ended up being. The F3 stands for fitness, fellowship, and faith. And the faith is more of a just don't believe you're the biggest thing in the world and don't believe you worship yourself. So there's something bigger than you. it's not necessarily Christian or Jewish or any other faith or Muslim. It's kind of all of them. Fellowship, obviously, men crave other men. And we need other men to mentor us and to be mentored by us. And the fitness is the thing that gets you there.
Yeah.
So men don't do things the way women do it. Like if we could sit across from each other and have coffee and knit to develop relationship and build leadership and build better men, we would do that. Mm-hmm. We just can't. Definitely so we use fitness.
Lifting heavy shit and getting down in the mud and with each other, and it builds that camaraderie.
Exactly. And so there's only five core principles to F3. Anything that fits in those is F3. So it's first is it's free. There's no cost required to do F3. Now it's the most expensive free workout you'll ever have. Two, and I say that jokingly, but two, it's free. It's open to all men. All men, doesn't matter. Fitness levels, age, anything. We'll figure it out. Held outdoors. Again, we want to keep it free.
Yeah.
So the best way to do that is hold it in public locations, public parks, public schools, you know, parking lots, wherever. And we don't use a lot of expensive equipment unless we bring it ourselves. And then four is peer led. so that we work out and we lead the workout eventually. I mean, sooner rather than later, hopefully, and ends in a circle of trust. So there's that fellowship and faith piece. That last 5 minutes or 10 minutes and whatever is the part that I kept coming back for, because I wasn't really fit. And that's part of my story, but I wasn't really fit when I joined F3 and over time became fit, but I was starting to delve into people's problems and they were looking at mine. And it's amazing when you tell somebody in a casual conversation, they say, "Hey, how are you doing?" And you say, "Do you really want the answer?"
Yeah.
In F3, if somebody asks you how you're doing, they really want the answer and they won't shy away from it. So that's pretty amazing, because most people are really surface in this world and F3 kind of breaks that out of you. So it's open to everyone. It's not for everyone, right? There's a lot of men that would show up and go, "Oh, that was great. It's 5 a.m. and I don't want to do this. It's 12 degrees outside."
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Doing it these last couple of days.
Right. So, I've been kind of a little bit, lucky, unlucky. I've been on the injured reserve. I had a repair of a hernia, a little over a month ago. And so I haven't been doing our favorite thing, which is burpees lately. So I've just been walking and starting to get back into jogging and stuff, but, pretty soon I'll be back doing the full thing, but I'm out there with the guys and we like to do parking lot cafeteria. And so I live in Jefferson County, Missouri, and we have a culture of, we bring heaters, we stick them right by the tailgate, pour coffee and stand around a heater.
Yeah.
You know? And it's pretty amazing.
Cool. So how many days a week?
I do it 6 or 7.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
So it's a 45-minute workout. Usually we do have hour-long workouts, but we designate them a little bit harder. And I've always just been the guy that goes all in. Like when I was doing Aikido more regularly, I was doing it 7 days a week.
Yeah.
2 hours a day. That's just been my personality. So for this, now people expect you there. So they look for you and you say you're going to be there. So what do? When you say something,
you wonder your show word, up.
Yeah. Right? Show up.
Yeah. F3 has changed everything.
How long have you been doing that?
September 21st, 2020.
Okay.
So just over 4 years.
Okay. Wow. Remember the exact date and everything.
I do, only because it was the day we launched one of the locations, which we call AOs. And so it's just that location has a date. Otherwise, I'd have forgotten it.
Okay.
How many different locations are there?
Ooh, when I started, that was the 7th location, I think. Now we have 155 in St. Louis.
Oh, wow. Holy shit. Yeah. In St. Louis?
In St. Louis, yeah. Wow. So the Nantan is the leader. So we used to have just one region, we'll call it, like group of AOs.
Yeah.
Now we have, I think, 20. We're about to launch another one. So I'm in Jefferson County. So I'm Benton to basically Herculaneum. So, and then we have another region that we had split off, which is south of Herculaneum. We call them F3 Expedition. And then we're about to split off our region into east and west, basically the Highway 30 corridor and or the 55 corridor. So, so we'll have 3 regions where there was none
before
3 years ago.
Wow.
It's growing it's, like a weed.
Well, it really focuses on a need that men in our society have. We've been marginalized a lot. Your generation, especially, but I'm Gen X. So I'm just angry at everybody, angry at the baby boomers, angry at you guys, because sandwiched between the two largest generations, right? But honestly, you know, what I feel F3 does is get us back to, you know, when guys would go to the club and sit around and have beers, but we don't have beers. We sit around and do burpees. Yeah. And then we talk and you get real with somebody face to face and you bleed with them and you sweat with them and you do all that stuff. And then it's like doing BJJ, you know, you're in something with them. You're doing
going
something
hell together.
Exactly. It's like the military. It's now you can do it in 45 minutes to an hour a day. And some of my best friends in the world I've known for 3 years.
That's awesome.
You know, I've known people for 30 years through the military and they're not as good of friends as guys I've known for 3 years. So it's amazing because they'll stick with you when you're going through hard stuff.
I feel the same way about a lot of my jiu-jitsu friends.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so how many, so it must be a pretty big group that you guys have down there if you guys are splitting off into 3 separate sections. How many people are a part of your AOS?
So we already split the expedition area off. Okay. And they have, I think, 10 now, and they're about to split because they're moving all the way past. They're in DeSoto and south of DeSoto. Okay. They're opening an AO in Farmington. So we're going all the way to Cape Girardeau.
Okay.
We'll meet up. Memphis has a group, and we'll probably figure out a way to
get that.
The goal is really to have within 20 minutes of any man to be able to get to a F3 AO within reality. But workouts are usually small, 7 to 8 guys. And, you know, sometimes we have convergences, what we call them, 20, 30, 50, 100. Last big one we had 175 guys there all working out together, and it was just great.
That's awesome.
You get a lot of energy from something like that. We always do the Murph together and
love it.
You know, stuff like that. So we do really hard things. And this month, January, a guy, Ralph, who would be a good guy to have on, but he's wrote an article in Men's Health 6 years ago now, and that kind of launched it in St. Louis. But his mom passed away in December a few years ago, 5 years ago, and he wanted to do something to honor her, but, you know, to get with guys, because I was his best friend growing up, and so he started this Make America Burpee Again. So it's kind of funny because, and it's fall down, get back up together 100 times a day minimum. So now we have a leaderboard. Of course, you get guys doing anything with numbers on it. We're going to go, I can do more than you.
Right.
Competing.
So like a guy last year did 2,000 a day.
Holy shit.
For a month. A couple years ago, we had a guy do 100 a day for the entire year. So we did like
365. Or 36,500 burpees. Wow.
More than that, but yeah. Wow. So he did almost 40,000 burpees that year. And so burpees is a perfect exercise if you haven't done one.
You can do it everywhere. Yeah. It's miserable. I mean, you can get a great workout in 10 minutes.
In 10 minutes, you can do 100 burpees and just be smoked.
That's what I did like a little kind of challenge for myself. I can't remember what month I did it last year, but I did 100 burpees a day for a month. And it's just, you know, I just set a little 10 minute timer, and I would do 10 a minute, you know, then I was like, all right, one day I was like, I need to see how fast I can do these things, you know, and like crank out 100 as fast as I could. Pretty happy with my time, but you
what
know,
was it?
6:40.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. That's competitive.
Yeah. It was,
I think the fastest I did, it was just under 8.
They're tough. I mean, I've got with jujitsu. I think that's, I'm good at burpees, 'cause I'm used to going hitting the ground and coming back up a lot.
Exactly.
You know? So it's just of just repeating that over and over and over again.
For me, it was football practice.
Yeah, when we did a ton of up downs.
Get them chopping. You know,
in baseball, we don't do this. Unless you got a line drive hit right back at you, get out of the way.
Yeah.
You're slowly getting up, dusting the dirt off. CrossFit though,
it's a little different.
Yeah, CrossFit will mix those in almost. It seems like
it's
almost every.
It's a pretty regular thing in CrossFit.
Yeah.
So obviously you said lots of burpees. You said minimal equipment. Like what do we bring into these? What do you show up with?
You get a gift, your first workout.
Okay.
And it's a $1.42 cinder block. So we use a 40-pound weight most of the time. I've moved up to sandbags. So I'm a bigger guy, so I throw 80 pounds around rather than 40.
Okay.
So what people are doing with 40 pounds, I'm either doing with 60 or 80. 60 is a good weight because we're doing high volume stuff.
Sure.
So we'll do 250 burpees in a workout with running and
push-ups
and everything else involved. Yeah, we do a lot of body weight stuff. Again, Jeffco has kind of developed a reputation. We do hard stuff a lot harder than other people. And so we just, but you get to get creative, and guys don't get that outlet very often. So like we'll have people that'll music theme a workout, and we call them beat downs. And it's amazing. People really have a great time leading other men, because my life, I was in the military early, young. So I led other men. And
what branch?
I was in the Army and then the Army Guard here in Missouri. So
thank you for your service.
Thank you. Thanks for being worth it. But you know, they've never led men in their lives. They've never led anybody in their lives. They have an individual producer job or something, and they've just never done it. And so we teach that leadership very simply. So you're telling guys that maybe 20 years older than you what to do and how to do it. It's different.
Sure.
It develops a sense of self and develops confidence, and then they can go back to their families and be better for their family. So I have a personal mission in life, and it's just make the world a better place through challenging men to be better, better for their families, better for their work, better for their friends, better for their community. And F3 has a mission, which fits my mission, kind of fits right into their mission, which is plant, grow, serve small workout groups for men for the invigoration of male community leadership. So we want you to be a better leader in your community. If you're doing F3 just to get a good workout, you're missing it. It's really to go be a better dad, go be a better husband. We have a whole leadership manual that goes with it and everything. And it's something that's changed me in a lot of ways, because it was all stuff I knew, but due to my upbringing, wasn't able to put it together. So it kind of gave me a foundation to put it together. And so I teach it. That's one of the things I do. Kind of as an additional thing, I work with the trainer is for Freedom Ops, which is an event company. Mm-hmm. So if you've ever heard of GORUCK,
yes,
bags and yes, all that stuff, sandbags. Sure. So we do similar things, but we're building in the leadership aspect of it. So we do a leadership school as well as the big culminating event. We've done runs, we've done rucks, we've done, you know, we're looking at this year at doing obstacle course races and using that tool to push you past your limits so you can understand where all the education comes from. So it's a whole weekend event rather than just an event.
Wow.
Well, it's awesome.
Yeah, so freedomops.fit, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, well, people go out there and check that out for sure.
Yeah. I mean, and it just seems so important, because I can feel in this day and age, leadership is just kind of falling off. Like, no one's taking accountability for themselves. No one's taking accountability for others. Like, it's just, I don't know. I feel like that's something that's lacking in our society today.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. This has been around for 11 years, and it's been solving the need. And we call them sad clowns, but men that don't even realize they're missing something. And then as soon as they realize they're missing it, they're like, oh, I've been missing this my whole life.
Yeah.
And it's just the fellowship, right? Mm-hmm. And having men hold you accountable to the things you said you were going to do. I'm not telling you what you're going to do.
Right.
You're saying, I want to be a better dad. I'm okay. There's a way to do that.
Be one.
Exactly.
Show me, you know?
Exactly.
That's awesome. I love that. I mean, wow. And so I'd love to, so you're in the military.
Mm-hmm.
So what drove you to go down that path?
Ooh, that's escape. So I was 17 years old. I was a junior in high school. I wasn't even a junior in high school. My 17th birthday, I got 5 phone calls before 8 o'clock in the morning. Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, and Air Force. They all called me and said, have you taken the ASVAB yet? What's that? So no, I hadn't. So I took the ASVAB, scored really well, I guess.
For those that don't know, what's the ASVAB?
Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery, ASVAB. And what it is kind of the generic test to see where you would fit best in the military. It's not like an SAT test or anything like that. It's a test that says, what shape is this? All the way to, how would you do something? How would you read this graph, which is high-end math, and it does everything in between, to really test your knowledge, but also your aptitude at learning. And so you'll have certain jobs open to you in the military based on your scores and section scores. And I guess I did really well. So I had anything open to me. So of course I picked an office job. bad advice, but my fault. I should have done more research. But I did jump out of planes.
Cool.
So that was cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. I was like, I want to do something dangerous.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, you can do this and this. And it was airborne school, and I did it. I did a speech once for the USO of Missouri about airborne school and how that kind of changed who I was, because I'm actually afraid of heights.
I was going to say, just jumping out of a plane, what's that like?
Well, it's more falling a lot of the time, but that's the one thing I did, is I always launched myself out. Some people just kind of bounce and fall out. But back when I did it, you actually had to jump. Now they just have you run out the back or the side. But I was a static line, so I didn't have to pull my parachute or anything. Only had a couple malfunctions ever in the 30 I did, but
what's a malfunction?
Chute didn't open.
Chute doesn't open fully in my case.
Okay.
Or
you get your backup chute though that you're having. Yeah,
I've never pulled my reserve, so no. there's a couple things there. But what happened to me was on my last two jumps in the Army, I had a new supply officer, so it was his. You do five jumps in airborne school, so it was his sixth and seventh jumps were my 29th and 30th jumps, and so I was leaving the military, and he was just getting in, and we jumped opposite doors, and so the timing always gets off because they're supposed to go 1-1-1-1-1, but you end up just kind of jumping all at once. And so each time I'd bounce into him under the aircraft.
Oh,
not as bad as you would think. It's not like his feet hit my chest or anything, but we came out and not literally bounced, but came down right next to each other. But he was always just ahead, a little bit ahead of me both times. And so his chute would open and then I would be right above him.
Oh.
And so you only have one column of air to hold up a parachute. So half of my parachute would collapse. I'd try to get off his parachute and so then I'd fall a little bit, and I lost both times the leapfrog. So I hit the ground with half a parachute from 60-ish. I was a lot smaller then, but yeah, it hurt a lot.
Oh, I'm sure it broke. I'm sure. Did you break anything?
Not that I accounted for. Yeah. I didn't take my boots off for 3 days.
Okay,
because I was like, this is gonna hurt if I have to put them back on. So I just
left them on.
Left him on and did the jump the next day.
Man.
Yeah.
So what made you join airborne school?
So I was always afraid of heights, and that goes back into the first time I almost died. I was three. I fell into a tree, ripped out the arteries in my left arm.
Fell out of a tree or fell?
Fell out off a ladder into a tree, actually. Oh, okay. And then fell out of the tree. But the branch went through my arm and tore a bunch of... Anyway. So developed a natural fear of heights. I did that when I was like 3 years old. That's a whole story that I could drag out for 2 hours. But because of that, I didn't like heights. But every one of my friends was like, hey, let's go jump off this cliff into the lake, or let's go do this. And so I was petrified every time. And I realized it was a limiting factor in my life. So I said, I'm going to force myself to get over this. I'm always going to be uncomfortable at heights. But now I didn't used to climb ladders. Now I'll get on the roof if I have to and do all the things I have to do, you know, as a man, but still don't like it.
Yeah.
So what this allowed me to do is overcome the natural, unconscious part of the fear and just bring it forward. So, and the reason I did that was I just didn't want to be controlled by anything. In this case, fear. So yeah, I was literally at 17 the reason I did it. And I was like, oh, that sounds cool and scary and all the things. But I would love to say I had a better reason to do it other than I just don't want to be a wimp my whole life.
That's a hell of a reason. I mean, challenging yourself to do something outside of your comfort zone, which nobody does anymore. Like, that's huge.
Yeah. So, going into life with a little bit of trepidation, a little bit of fear is...
I think fear is a healthy, I mean, we all feel it. And I mean, I don't think it's necessarily something we should run from, you know, not always at least.
Right.
You know, I think sometimes you need to face your fears and you need to go jump off that cliff. You need to go walk into that, you know, that class you're afraid to join, or go show up to the workout that you're afraid to do. You know, it's such an important emotion, or I don't even know if it's an emotion. It's just part of life.
Mm-hmm. If you use it right, it could be the ultimate motivator.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I always worried about the people that said they weren't afraid, because you're either afraid jumping out of an aircraft at certain altitude or you're crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, there's usually no other option. And the crazy people, you don't want to be near.
Right.
Yeah. It's just like, I was blessed to go to combat zones a couple times, but never be in, like, nobody ever shot very much at me in anger. So I always had armor to get behind or something. But all of my buddies that have been in active, really in-depth firefights are like, I knew who to hang out with, the guys that wanted to live. Now, they were just as brave, just as strong, and some of them didn't live, but they wanted to get out of there with everybody alive. So they were going to do everything they could to get that way. Whereas the crazy ones, they don't care.
They don't have, they don't have any regard for their own health and safety.
Yeah. Now, sometimes the two look alike,
sure.
Especially if you're watching it from the outside, but yeah.
So were you ever deployed? Or
I was deployed twice, once to, well, I was deployed a bunch of times, but twice to combat, once to Iraq and once to Afghanistan. So
okay. What years were those?
So Iraq is 05, 06, and I always get this wrong. I think it's 10 and 11 in Afghanistan.
Okay. How long have you been out?
I got out in 14, so okay. I did 23 years and just over 10 years.
It's you mentioned they reached out to you at 17. Is that when they can start doing it? I thought it was 18.
So you can be solicited by recruiters at 17.
Okay. To kind of prep.
Because you can sign up at 17 with your parents' approval.
Okay.
Used to be 14.
Oh, wow.
Back in World War II.
Could you fucking imagine? Holy cow.
Well, the high school wasn't a thing back then.
That's true. Right,
yeah. I mean, if you didn't, you just weren't, you mean, and yeah. And what
they
was
needed
school?
It at that point. I mean,
yeah. 14 or 16 or something, but either way.
Right.
Yeah.
You know why they choose 18, 17 and 18 year olds to do all the dirty work, right? Because you'll just do it. Yeah. You don't think through the consequence. You don't think through consequences until you're like 25.
Mm. Right.
Or like, makes sense.
Why am I doing this? Who is this benefiting? Is this benefiting me? Yeah.
Yeah. So I had the luxury of going to war the first time at 30.
Okay.
So I was an old guy. Mm-hmm. And I was a supply guy, you know, doing essentially an office job. I did go out and did a bunch of stuff, but it's kind of where my goal of helping other men started. Because I realized I'd been through kind of a rough childhood and all the things I'd been through, but I had two kids and I was a little bit older and I wasn't in a lot of their guys' chain of command. So they would talk to me a little bit, just, hey man, this is what I'm feeling. I'm like, all right, sit down. So my supply room ended up being like a therapy session every once in a while. And it really worked out well because it led me to believe that I really have a passion for helping other men be better. I wasn't able to articulate that until probably 3 years ago, but that's when that started.
Yeah, nothing like you said, like we've been saying, tough times to really bring men together.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, it's just this whole, and we've done a few podcasts on it, but like toxic masculinity, the term that gets thrown around, and it just drives me up a fucking wall. Like, just the things that they're labeling as toxic, and I'm like, that's just like being a man. Like, so basically everything about being a man is toxic. Like that's the part that drives me crazy.
Well, I would even challenge you to say that they label those things toxic, but that's not what they're talking about. They're actually talking about all the things that make men look like women. And not look like, but act like. The most dangerous thing in the world is a weak man, because he won't ever come at you face to face. You turn around, then he comes after you. It's the guy in grade school that would tell the teacher rather than confront you.
Right.
You know, and not that that's a bad thing. If there's
a time and a place, I mean, there's a reason.
Sometimes you walk up to somebody and say, hey, stop. And you just accept the consequences, whether it's you get your tail kicked or whatever. But, Jordan Peterson always says a good man, a good, dangerous man under voluntary control is the best man. You know, so know how to put somebody down, know how to do the thing, be able to do the thing and not want to do.
Right. Cause I know a lot of, some of the most badass dudes I know are the most gentle, kind-hearted, sweetest people you'll ever meet. But if you were, you know, but
shit, in the, under Trevor,
the, yeah, under
super,
the right,
super soft, but Kyle,
yeah, under the right circumstances, they are two of them. Literally that's exactly who I'm thinking of. Yeah. Like two of my two jiu-jitsu coaches, they're like the nicest, most helping, giving people you'll ever meet, but like they've kicked my ass hundreds
of
times.
Mat is...
Yeah, you know, they throw me around, they ragdoll me around that mat, like it's like I don't know what I'm doing. You know,
well, and we were talking earlier off air, but that's a technique thing, probably.
Oh, no, yeah, absolutely, 100%. You know, doing it for 25 years. Mm-hmm. You know, like
and just being able to, and
they know what I'm going to do, but way long before I'm going to, you know, they're six steps ahead of me in the chess game, you know,
exactly. Like,
there's no, you know, maybe one day I'll be able to catch up, but you know, I got a lot of learning to do.
They'll slow down.
Yeah.
it's unfortunately it's what happens.
Yeah. That's Kyle said something the other day. It was just like, you know, he's like, you know, I love seeing you guys get better until I have to roll with you, you know, it's like, you know, he said something like that. He's like, yeah, you know, I love watching you guys improve until I have to roll with you. And, you know, and have to, you guys are, you know, catching me on stuff and, you know, it's cool to see. And, you're a martial artist as well.
Before I was, in the Army, it was just martial arts by experience, I guess. I fought a lot as a kid. Misspent youth. Spent a lot of times getting punched in the face or punching somebody else in the face. But that's what boys did back then. I mean, some of my best friends in the world are people that I got in fights with.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't see that anymore.
No, you don't.
No, because people can't lose a fight. There is no natural pecking order, because pecking order now comes from who's liked by somebody else.
Right.
Like, if the teacher believes you over this person, then you're, or I don't get it. Like, I watched my son grow up and I was trying to help him, and he was specifically told, you're not allowed to defend yourself. Like, those words were said by teachers. And I'm like, I will defend you 100% with anybody. If somebody tries to do something to you and you stop them, 100% okay with me, no matter what. Yeah, I will help you with that consequence.
I got into that. Shouldn't say I got into it, but my ex-wife and I have a disagreement on that, because there is a kid, and my oldest son is a couple of years ago, and this kid spit on my son.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's an act of aggression.
And so Connor didn't do anything, didn't tell anybody, didn't say anything to the teacher, but he came home and he was really upset, and I started talking to him and he told me. And so I called the school, like, hey, this happened. Was anything reported on this? Like, you guys are supposed to report any incidents and things like that. No one said anything to me. And they're like, well, no, we didn't know about it. I said, okay, well, now you do. So here's your opportunity to do something. Because I taught my boys. I said, listen, first time, go ahead, tell your teachers. Second time, confront the kid, say, don't do it again. And if he does it again, then you have every right to punch him in the face. And they're 4 and 5 years old.
Right.
My ex-wife was not pleased at me telling them that.
Well, if it goes into anything in life, if you allow people to take advantage of
they're
you,
going to.
They're going to, especially since we don't have that citizen's contract we had 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Ever since I've been alive, whether it's my generation's fault or not, you know, the citizen's contract is over.
What do you mean by citizen's contract?
Most people don't believe you should just be a good person. Follow the rules, because the rules allow for a easier society here. Right. Mow your lawn.
Yeah.
Because mowing your lawn makes your house look good and makes your neighbors like you, because they don't have to be your best friend.
House. Yeah.
But now every house is looking good. Right. And, you know, HOAs weren't a thing because you didn't need them.
Yeah.
You know, now you need, the more rules you have, the less morals you have. And
that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I'd rather have a moral society than a rules based society. I don't need laws to tell me not to hurt you.
Right.
I'm just not going to hurt you. But if you hurt my kid, I'm going to hurt you.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Well, and that's, so that was the thing. It was like, my ex-wife was like, Pat, they're 4 and 5. They don't know any better. I'm like, yeah, but that comes from somewhere. And if this kid's not going to get punished for it, something needs to happen about it. And so I was like, fine, if they do it again and you want them to handle it this way, then I'll go after the parents. I don't give a shit. If that's how it's going to be, like, you don't have to fuck with my kid. Your son's not going to spit on my son and continue to spit on my son without any repercussions.
Right.
If my son can't defend himself, then I'm going to defend him. I'm going to defend for him. And that means, obviously, I'm not going to go after this little kid, but I'm going to go after the parents for basically being shitty parents and not telling their son and reprimanding their son on not spitting on people.
Right.
And so, I don't know. I think that's probably why we're not married, but hey, you know, we see differently and all that. And you know, She's like, Pat, when they get a little bit older, that's fine. If that's what you want to teach them, but right now they're 4 and 5, then they don't need to know that. And I said, I kind of disagree with you on that, but.
I firmly believe that you should learn restraint, but you have to be able to be restrained from something.
Sure.
Well, I mean, it's like, my whole thing was like, you're giving this kid 3 opportunities. You told the teacher the first time, comes back and does it again. You confronted the kid yourself. And if he does it a third time, that's just blatant disrespect and like doesn't care.
three strikes, you're out.
Right. Yeah, it's baseball. Hey, you know, but that's the thing too, though. Like if you talk to anybody, so like, I remember, I did Krav Maga for a hot minute when I was still playing baseball. And one of the things they mentioned was like rule of law. When we were talking about laws, was if someone attempts to hurt you or harm you three times, at that point, you can legally do whatever you want because it's considered self-defense. They get three attempts, or maybe it was even when I was taking my conceal and carry class, they were saying something that somebody can attempt to hurt you three times, and then you can legally defend yourself in whatever form you want. And you could literally kill somebody, but that because they attempted and took three swings on you, or whatever, that would, and now I don't know if that's actually true, but that's what they were telling us at the time. And I'm like, I need to look into that some more and find out for sure. But that's how I know how I've lived my life. If someone's going to do something three times without any, you know, then yeah, I'm going to do what I need to do to defend myself. Yeah. So
that's due to the nature of the things I've done in my life. I tend to have a lot of police officers as friends.
And, yeah.
And they go by their use of force model, which is they can go one up. So if you have hands, they can pull out the nightstick, unless they're 5 foot and you're 7 foot four.
Right.
Then they're just pulling out their gun because they can't stop you with a nightstick. Right. So it's really just meet force with force and go one up is how I would do it. Mm. So if you were coming at me, I'm like 15 years younger than me and a stud. Yeah, I'm probably going to shoot you. I'll deal with
the
12.
I'll take that as a compliment.
I'll deal with the 12 at the jury. But the great thing about that is most martial artists would never do that.
Right.
Like yeah. That's the thing I love about martial arts is, you know, whether it be pistols or rifles and, you know, militaristic martial arts, or it's BJJ or Aikido, and, you know, people that are truly dangerous, they don't want to fight.
They don't want to fight.
Because that takes
nothing to prove.
That takes a really big toll on your soul. Do bad things to people.
Yeah, and then there's also that piece of, if you are a martial artist, you realize really quickly that you're not the toughest guy out there. You know?
Right.
Like yeah. You'll figure that out in your first, you know, 20 minutes of jiu-jitsu, that like, hey, you're not as tough as you think you are. Like
right.
I think the average man just has a very inflated
ego
and inflated idea of what they're capable of until they get out there with someone who actually knows what they're doing and experiences that for themselves. And they realize, oh, okay, maybe I'm not as tough as I think I am just because I watched, you know, I watched the UFC or I was in a street fight in high school once, or, you know, I got into a bar fight in college and I knocked that guy out, you know, cause he wasn't even looking, you know, or whatever it was.
I remember going to a bar, used to watch UFC at the bar cause it was pay-per-view. It was like $100. You're like, we'll just go to the bar and spend 50
on beers. Yeah.
Yeah. And you'd hear people telling the guy what to do. And I'm like, been in martial arts for however long at that time. And I'm like, yeah, he's trying to do that. Mm. Yeah. Just look at him.
Right.
Yeah. Do you know how hard it is when someone's trying to stop you?
And the other guy gets a vote too. And one of the biggest things I always learned in the military is the enemy gets a vote. And I'm a historian. Like I love history. So I've read a lot of generals and you know, everything. No matter your plan or not, the enemy gets a vote in what you do. So if you're not accounting for their vote, you're probably going to fail in your plan. And so that's the same thing with fighting one-on-one. It's the same thing with fighting. And Aikido is, we eventually train to deal with many more than one attacker at a time. And so the goal is not to be obviously taken down, especially because if one guy gets you down, the other two are just going to pile on,
right?
Or the other three or five or whatever it is. And so
for those that don't know, what is Aikido?
Aikido is a Japanese martial art. It's relatively, it's considered a new martial art, like BJJ. It's new, but it's based on jiu-jitsu and Aiki jiu-jitsu and Daito Ryu and ancient or older martial arts that had a lot of breaks and really hard styles. And Aikido has been not sportified because there is no competition necessarily, but it has been, we'll say, the edges have been rounded off a lot to make it a more fluid martial art. It's considered a soft style, not a lot of hard blocks. Blend with rather than force on force. So there's a couple martial artists that you would know, one being Steven Seagal. He was a big yes. Aikido guy, but he had 10 years of karate prior. And the reason Aikido wasn't based around competition was because you had to be a black belt to walk into an Aikido Jojo. It's some other form of martial arts. So you had to be a judo black belt and recommended from your instructor to go see O-sensei.
Really?
Yeah. So originally you knew how to fight before you walked in an Aikido Jojo. Now, if we had the luxury of talking to some of the original students of O-sensei, and some of it's written down, but it's more passed down oral tradition, that they used to go out to the bars and every day, and they were uchideshi, so they lived in the dojo, and so they would train 8 hours a day, and then what do young men want to do? Drink and get women, right? So they would go to the bar and fight over women, and then again, this is a story of a story, but they would come back and they would be, you know, whatever, or they'd get called from jail, and O-sensei'd go get them, and he'd say, "But did you win? Like, you shouldn't be doing this at all. Mm-hmm. This is not what we do, but did you win?"
Yeah.
Like, same thing your dad would say. It's like, you're not supposed to fight for no reason.
But how'd you do it?
But did you win? And it may have lost some of that effect over time. And I train with, in the style in which I train, we train more martially than average, so to speak. Like, we're not going into it with traditional necessarily attacks. We start there, like the overhead strikes and things like that. But people don't leave their fist hanging out there.
No.
People box.
Yeah.
Especially in the West. You're not punching and waiting for somebody to grab your wrist. You're punching and
bring it back to your chin.
And if you're probably comboing, right?
Sure.
Jab, jab, cross.
Yeah.
1-2-3s.
Right.
You know, all the boxing that the average person or the average fighting person knows, which is was blown away just due to my upbringing. Everybody I knew fought,
mm-hmm.
but my son's whole generation, they never fought because they were told violence, you get kicked out no matter
right.
what. Like, how are you going to have a military with kids that have never rolled around with each other?
Right.
And
I realize you're not made of glass.
And that's where we're at right now. That's a whole nother topic.
There's a few fight nights that we had in high school where we're out of the garage and boxing gloves came out.
Yep, that's what we did. We did that a handful of times. I was in a handful of stupid high school party fights, stuff like that.
And we would go out in the desert. So I grew up in Arizona, my high school time, and we'd go to the desert and they would clear out a spot. If you had a beef during the week, Friday night.
Yeah, we had an alley right down the street from my high school. It was called the Wynn Alley because this guy... His last name, Michael Wynn, he had like this crazy KO one time, like really fucking flatlined this kid. And so then we just referred to it as Wynn Alley from then on.
Wow.
it was like a guy that had been training martial arts versus somebody who thought they were a tough guy. And it was just, he just stepped right into a hook and KO'd him clean. I mean, but man, it's just so dangerous on concrete. I mean, it's dangerous in general to be fighting, but like, you look at all those times where, you know, I saw a lot of fights in high school, but like, and thankfully, like there was never any like serious injury that resulted from them. But like, you know, like you flatline someone and they bounce their head off the concrete. I mean, serious
dangerous,
things can happen,
yeah.
You know, like.
Actually, funny, not funny, but story about that is I got to my second training duty station at Fort Lee, Virginia. And, the day we got there, somebody had been killed by a blindsided uppercut, hit him and he hit his head on the ground and lived about 3 more weeks and then died.
Oh,
it was
shit.
Bad. The guy went to prison. He's still in prison. He's in Break Rocks into Little Rocks, Big Rocks to Little Rocks prison.
Yeah. Think about that. If you're ever going to get into a fight, you know, you just never know what can happen. You know, you're really rolling the dice because you don't know, especially when you're in a bar on the street or, you know, there's a curb there. Like there's all these things. There's all these factors that are, you're not going to, when you punch somebody in the face, you don't expect that they're going to die. but that's a certain certainly a possibility.
That is a possibility. Yeah. Absolutely.
Like it's
especially if you catch them right, get them in the temple, something like yeah.
Ball and bounce their head off the curb or whatever it is.
It just goes back to showing the importance of being able to know how to defend yourself.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the fighting today though goes to the ground pretty quickly. So
not if you're fighting me. Yeah. I don't want to be on the ground with either of you two guys. You're big and you know how to do it. Yeah. All my friends were wrestlers, so yeah. I learned to wrestle a little bit. They would try to wrestle me. I'm like, dude, I'm 50 pounds heavier than you. I'm going to win.
Yeah.
Like, no, you won't. Ball them up, and they're like, oh. Yeah, strength and size does matter.
Yeah,
sorry. It does, for sure.
That's 100%. Why martial arts and that's learning weight how classes. To fight.
Yeah.
Well, but that's also learning how to fight against anybody.
Yeah.
And tall people, short people, that's why I love Aikido so much is we don't have weight classes. Fight against new people, people that have been there forever, and it all happens.
So is there sparring in Aikido?
Not technically, but yeah. We just we would call it freestyle or rondori is take on more than one attacker and they're coming at you from any different angle or whatever. So yeah, not technically sparring because we don't take it past really, getting crushed, mm-hmm. but you may get barreled into the wall.
Okay.
So
because even like that's why I like jiu-jitsu. I mean, it was as hard as it was and as how often I got my ass kicked. Like I didn't feel other than that one time where that guy started manipulating my wrist and I felt like I fucked my elbow up. Other than that, like, I mean, I got arm barred. I got choked out, like all the things. Like I didn't feel like I was ever really in danger, especially when you're rolling with people that know what the fuck they're doing.
Well, and you got to trust the guy. You're
right. With, exactly. Yeah. And so, I mean, that's the thing. And that's what I like about the gym that we go to that, it's, they keep in the beginning, beginners classes that teach you the fundamentals. And then I had to bump up just because my schedule, they let me go into the fundamentals classes where I'm, 3 weeks in and I'm rolling with blue belts, brown belts, black belts. Oof. And it was eye opening. I mean, I was getting my ass kicked by Zach and guys of his size. And I'm just like, wait, I'm 6'3". What the fuck is going on here?
Drew, what's next for you, man?
Oh, so I'm a wealth consultant. I've been in this industry for over 20 years. I absolutely love helping people figure out how to solve their money problems. People with money have problems just like people without money, right?
Mo problems.
that's a very true statement. But, and I love helping people solve their, put a dollar sign to their goals. And I love helping men get past all sorts of obstacles. So my childhood wasn't the greatest, alcoholic father, divorces, single mom, no money, all the things. But through my experience and through my desire to help people, I've come up with a pretty good understanding of how people tick. And so I do it for free with F3. I counsel a lot of guys and I love it. I mean, it motivates me. It keeps me going. But with Freedom Ops, I'm able to teach. So we have what we call a grow school. We teach for basically 4 hours in the interim between workout sessions, and I teach through F3 and I teach through my work, and it's really been an amazing thing. So I think I'm actually going to go take some classes in counseling just as kind of what I do if I retire from the current job. Like that'll be good. And my job has a lot of flexibility that I can lean in on that, but I've done some life coaching for people. And I don't even know how to charge for it really. I just love to help men become better at what they do. And also having the ability to have that conversation with men and tell them like, hey, what you're doing is wrong. Like it's objectively wrong. Like I get you do what you want. We're in America, but if you keep going down this path, you're going to end up in these things because I've either done it or seen many people do it. And, it takes a little bit of courage to tell somebody, that they're wrong because that's another good thing about F3 is we expect candor. We expect you to tell us the truth. And we expect to be able to tell you the truth. So just having that kind of framework allows me to do those things. So helping men grow and lead and really changing society when it comes right down to it. I have a dream of changing society, and all we have to do is change 10%. We don't have to change the whole thing, because once you change 10% of a population of any sort, that will turn around and change the rest of the population. Now, you can change it for the bad, which is, I think, what's been happening for the last 50 or 60 or 70 years, or you can change it for the good. And I think what we do moving forward is we spend time with men one-on-one in groups where we promote the good and call out the bad, and hopefully men change. And again, you only have to get 1 out of 10.
Right.
You get 1 out of 10, the other 9 will follow, because those 10 are the leaders. That's who you want to get. You want to get the leaders of other leaders. And then I don't have to teach everybody. I just have to teach those 1 out of 10. So that's going forward, after I leave the Nantan role, sometime this year. I've already got my successor picked out. Whether I kind of go up to the nation level and work there, or just stick with Freedom Ops and do that, which was born out of F3, but isn't F3. And there's just so much education. I would love to be a speaker. I've done some speaking stuff, but really all I want to do is see men get better at whatever their chosen path is, as long as it's doing good for the world. And there's some leadership principles that are not unique to any one field. It's honor your word, right?
Right.
If you say something, do it. Get your, we call it a concentrica, but get your target of effect in the right order. It better be your family first. Otherwise you're not going to have a family very long. Right. Yeah. So your aunt, we call it, our spouses, our M's, most important relationship, because it turns us from an I to a we, and I'm on number two as well. So I didn't do that the first time. God bless me with a second opportunity. I'm not taking that one for granted. But then you got your 2.0s, your kids behind that, right? And they, if you don't raise them up in the way you want them to be raised up, somebody will, right? Whether, yeah. and that's a whole nother conversation too. And then you have the people that you choose to do life with, like you two. I'm sure you guys speak truth to each other pretty regularly.
Of course.
Right? Yeah. We would call that a shield lock. We would call men that you protect them, they protect you.
Yeah.
But also in that protection, they're speaking truth to you, because they don't want to be next to a bad person.
Is that like a Spartan shield lock thing?
Exactly. Exactly. And it's just words we use. And then we have mentors, or blades and whetstones. I love that iconography, because if you look at a whetstone, and if you've ever sharpened a knife on a whetstone, two things change: the whetstone and the knife.
Yeah,
right. So
they both get worn down when sharpened.
Right, when I mentor somebody, they're changing me as much as I'm changing them. And so that's that blade whetstone relationship. And then the rest of the world comes after that. Then your job comes after that, because if those other things don't hold true, what does your job matter? And it's the easiest thing to maintain, easiest relationship to maintain. You go do the best you can do, what more than they hired you for, and then you get paid. If it's you working for yourself, you know what to do. But if you put that in front of everything else, at times it's got to be. But if your whole life is centered around work, you're failing. I truly believe you're failing. And
that's where I was. That's where I failed. First marriage, with my kids, everything, like my job, I put that first. I mean, coming right out of baseball and then getting that mentality where, like, I mean, I was being selfish with that, chasing a dream, and I was putting everything I had into it, and then building this business that I have, like, that was it. And that's it. And it does. You're absolutely correct. My marriage failed because, I mean, there's a lot of reasons, but one of the biggest ones was, I always put, I would put my kid, it was my kids, and then work, and then my spouse. So, right. And that's not any way to be married.
No.
Or live a life.
It, you choose to be transformed in that relationship.
Yeah.
And so because of that choice, you have to honor your choices, right? It's a decision. You said you were going to do something. You have to do it. It's just going back to the simple thing of honoring your word. I also think of leading by example. I think what we have to do as men that have failed at times.
Right.
And failure is not an end point.
No.
It's a waypoint. Experience. It's a learning spot in your life. And I've got a lot of them to point to. But and I think it's incumbent upon us to take these, because we can't change men that are already gone or already past that relationship, but we can change the next generation. And so I think you have kids, mm-hmm. right? And you have kids. I have kids. Mine are 24 and 25, but still, you know, still pouring into them, but pouring into other young ones too. In ways of just like, I'm closer to be, I say this a lot and people look at me weird. I'm closer to being a grandpa than I was to being a father. Right. I mean, my kids are 24 yeah. is my youngest.
Yeah.
So hopefully in the next 24 years, I have grandkids. I'm praying and hoping, but, you know, looking forward to helping my entire community out. And how do I do that? So again, I go back to my ultimate life purpose, which is make the world a better place. And if what I'm doing isn't making the world a better place, I need to do something else. And you have to think through a process like me working and making money and doing all the things I do. That is making the world a better place because I'm helping my clients make better decisions. I'm also through the money I get, I'm able to, you know, give fiscally and financially and also give more time to youth or to other men that are not as far along or as gray as I am. You know, and so that's, again, what's next for me is just doors wide open, but maybe get some certifications, more of them, you know, in counseling or whatever, just so I have that psychological background. And I have a minor in psychology.
Me too.
So
me too.
But I'd like to get some counseling background.
Yeah, very cool.
Well, you said something there and it just made me think of this line I heard recently that I've been thinking a lot about when you're talking about the 10%, you know, it's 10% of the men to change all the rest of the other men. And I heard this line and it was, psychology is more contagious than the flu, you know? So if you're around people that you affect the people around you, you know, with how you think. And, it's just something I've been really thinking about, but it just felt like that fit right into what you were, you're saying.
I mean, it's the five people you surround yourself with, you know?
Yeah.
And I saw a cool video the other day. It was a top that was just laying dead in the middle. And then they just started throwing five other tops in there that were spinning. And those five other tops got that one top that was sitting still up and moving.
Really?
Yeah, it was really cool. I'll have to find it and send it to you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have about 2 inches of depth on a lot of different topics, but physics is not one of them.
Yeah. I didn't know.
Like that is like, that is like, that's magic.
Right.
Yeah. Ooh, magic.
Yeah.
Right. But the correlation to like how, you know, talking about, hey,
no, it's the perfect
example of like the five people that you surround yourself and how their energy that they give off and can motivate someone else to, that may be sitting still to get going and move forward. So no, I thought that was really cool.
Perfect.
Yeah. So now one thing you were talking about and counseling and helping others. And this is something that, you know, we've talked about already. And then today is ego. Obviously with F3, that ego gets put aside real quick when you're working your ass off and all that. But like, you know, these people that you might help outside of that, I mean, how do you get them to put that ego aside and be able to sit there and just be like, because that's the biggest thing for me. And then I had to put mine in check with the divorce. And then now the relationship that I have with my ex-wife's boyfriend and then the relationship I have with my ex-wife, like I had to put that ego aside. And that, you know, for a lot of people, that's so, so difficult. And they don't understand how I was able to do that. And the people that you talk to and you help and work with, how do you get them to kind of keep that ego in check or put that ego aside?
So, that's a great question. The way I put my ego aside is pain.
Yeah.
A lot of pain. Both emotional pain, physical pain,
mm-hmm. right, spiritual pain. Anybody that's going to put anybody's ego in check.
Right. And so people usually are open to help when they stop, when what they're doing stops working and the pain of change is less than the pain of staying the same. That's usually when people are open to help. So ego's kind of already checked a little bit. But some people, and this is really big in today's society, is some people have ego around their victimhood and they think that's really a good thing to be a victim. That's why you have a society like you do now where People would rather tell somebody than fix it themselves. People will tell you how to live your life, but can't live their own life. So I think there's a couple things there. Is not everybody's going to be helped. Not saying I will quit trying until they quit trying, but there's so many things going through my head. 'Cause that is such a deep question. That's such a deep question. How you get through ego in the martial arts. I would just put them on their back.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, you want to come in with the ego? Well,
I'll show you you're not.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And so there was that, but in through just talking to somebody, sometimes you just have to listen, and then go, tell me about this. I can see dad issues a mile away about how somebody acts. Because I have them, because I'm witnessing how I used to be. Mm-hmm. And so I can just say, hey, I'm sure you're this, and this. And some people will be honest and say, yeah, you nailed it. Or some people won't be. And then you go back. There's a truism. It's in the Bible, but people just shorten it to pearls before swine. And it basically says, stop throwing all your good stuff to people that aren't going to appreciate it. So there's a point to when you do have to pull back a little bit and stop. I'm really stubborn. So for me, that point's way farther past and usually requires one of the smartest people I know, which is my wife, to speak into my life a little bit. And like, hey, you're wearing yourself out for stuff that you can't fix. And so I say a thing every time we call it queuing. Every time I lead the workout, the last thing I say to these guys is, I love you and there's nothing you can do about it. Love is the thing we were called to do by Jesus, right? So we're supposed to love people. We don't have to like them. We don't have to work with them. We don't have to be around them. We have to love them. That's the commandment. And so if you truly love them, sometimes you have to let them fail. And that's what I think our society has come to, which you can't fail in our society in a lot of ways. I mean, you can do damage to yourself and eventually fail, but there's always somebody there that'll help you pick up, which is great and telling about some people think that they're immune to failure because they've got a backstop all the time. So when I love people, sometimes that love is pretty harsh. You know, you probably spanked your kids once or twice, right? And that's because they're running towards the street. You don't have time to communicate with them and watch them do it three or four times. You're like, nope, you're never running towards the street again, so I'm going to fix it. Or you put your hand on the stove. That's a self-limiting problem, right? Because of pain. So doesn't mean you don't love them, and you're not letting your kid put their hand on their stove, so you smack them a little bit. Like, hey, that's pain to do those things. So, it's hard. The hardest thing I have ever had to do is watch somebody destroy themselves. And that comes from, again, addicts running my family. And, you know, you do everything you can to the point where it almost takes you down for their addiction. And then you back off and they destroy themselves. And it's like, I'll be here when you're ready, but I can't go down this path with you anymore. So that's a long answer and a very big answer to your question, but sometimes the ego gets in the way.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You can't stop it. Cross my fingers, hope I can verbally or physically, but sometimes I can't.
Yeah.
Right.
That's awesome.
Well, Drew, this is really great having you on, man. This has been a great episode and I've gotten a lot out of this. So thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Well, thank you.
Anything else you want to talk about or push before we or promote before we let you go?
No, other than, you know, go f3nation.com, find a workout, just step in, say Power Clean sent you. You get a funny nickname.
Yeah. Oh, Power Clean.
Mine is Power Clean. Okay. That's a whole story. I broke both my arms doing a Power Clean when I was 19 years old. So.
Oh, wow.
You tell an embarrassing story and you get something that they make up right there. And that's your
kind of. You got it on your water bottle right there.
Yep. My wife did that for me. She thinks F3 is the biggest thing, best thing I've ever done other than kids and her. Also Freedom Ops. Right now we're basically F3 exclusive, but we're branching out. So we'll be open to women as well. But if you're a man out there and you're listening to this and you don't have a tribe, a group, that you can be honest with and that will love you no matter what and will tell you you're wrong, get one. And F3 is that group if you need it. Again, it's open to all men. It's not for every man. And just, we want you there. We want you to come work out with us. You'll make, and a lot of people don't figure out that it's not really about the fitness. The fitness is a byproduct. Mm. Like I've lost 100 pounds. The fitness is a byproduct, but the real thing is about doing better in your community and taking it out to the world.
Awesome. So. Well, we like to hit the guests with one last question.
Sure.
I have a feeling on where this is going to go and what you're going to say, but we call it the tombstone game.
Oh, okay.
Here lies Drew. What's it say on your tombstone?
This is a great question only because I'm going to pull my phone out because I wrote this down already. I didn't know this question was coming.
Really?
Okay.
I did not, but one of the other guys that was the Nantan prior to me actually asked us to have a one sentence obituary.
Ooh, perfect.
See if I can find it really quick. But the one sentence obituary, I remember what it was. It was only a few words. Loved by some, respected by many. I want people to understand, because I will love everybody, but they don't understand that love is, you know, obviously I can't love like God, but that's the point of it, right? It's brotherly love, sisterly love. It's that universal love. So people won't understand that, but I want them to understand that when I said something, I meant it. When I did something, it was for their benefit or my benefit or the family's benefit, but all of those can be the same. And so that's why I say loved by some, respected by many. And if I have, you kind of get measured in your life by how long your funeral procession is.
Sure.
I want mine to block a city.
That's so awesome.
I just want to love everybody I can.
Yeah.
And it comes weird from a guy who's 6'1" and 275 pounds, you know, so
that's awesome.
No, it's perfect, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was a great time today, and we got a lot out of this, and I think a lot of people out there will too.
I hope they do. Thank you.
Well, thank you guys so much for tuning into the show. Please click that subscribe button for us if you haven't already. That would help us out a ton. Click that like button as well. Comment what you thought below, and we will see you next time.